20 to 30 years ago, I've been in Seattle a long time, and I remember there was a period in Seattle, especially that period following Boeing. There was a period where Boeing wasn't doing very well and laid off a lot of people.
74,
1970? Right around the early 70s. And as a consequence of that, a lot of space opened up. So there were a lot of loft space for artists, and apartments were cheap. You could have a part-time job, a minimum wage part-time job, and still be able to afford a pretty decent one-bedroom apartment. That opens up a huge possibility for a lot of writers who are just starting out don't have that a lot of money.
But that's the case around the country. There are some markets that are hotter than others, and Seattle being the hottest of them.
Right.
But it used to be that you could have a job at the factory right out of high school and make enough money to have a vacation every year and have a pension at the end of it, and those times are gone.
They're gone.
And that's neoliberalism. Yeah, exactly. That's not just Seattle.
That's it. Yeah, that's exactly right. So it's pretty distressing.
Something has to give on that.
So, yeah, something has to give. And it's unfortunately the landlord. More recent developments have not been encouraging.
No, I'm not going to get into that now because I have a feeling a rant would develop. But
yes.
But I do want to go to your description of Chartres Cathedral because this, again, you talk about poetry.
Mm-hmm.
You say, after my run, I put my sore heel up on a pillow and watch a show I recorded about French cathedrals. Les cathédrales... I wouldn't know how to say that. De voler, something like that?
De voler?
Maybe you can read that since I can't read French. French is my worst language, I'll tell you that.
Well, I'm not great at speaking French myself, every time we go to France, and I do try to speak French, it's amazing. You have to be willing to humiliate yourself.
Of course.
It's difficult to do that. But let me see. De voler. It's unveiled. The cathédrale. De voile means the cathedral's unveiled. They go into the engineering of the cathedrals, which is amazing because, as you can well imagine, there's a great deal of weight involved. That's a lot of stone that's very high up there, in those vaults especially, because they curve. So there's a lot of very amazing engineering that goes into the structure of those cathedrals. Oh, so did you want me to...
That'd be great.
Read the... Okay. I will read... maybe about half of this. After my run, I put my sore heel up on a pillow and watch a show I recorded about French cathedrals, Les Cathédrales de Boisier. It is said that the cathedral is essentially an experience of light. Light is the most important architectural element. The rose windows of Chartres Cathedral, for instance, celebrate the passage of light through a material, metaphorically transmitting a message of divine passage to the human body while telling the story of David's triumph over Saul, the birth of Jesus, the last judgment in Christ, with the 24 elders of the apocalypse. The delicate stone tracery that holds the stained glass in the rose windows of the cathedrals is due in large measure to the quality of the stone itself. Most of the cathedrals are clustered near what were once quarries of calcareous stone. That's amazing in itself. People who've been to Paris will probably remember that a lot of the stone there has this yellowish tint to it, and all of France seems to be very heavy in calcareous stone or limestone. Notre Dame de Paris benefited from two nearby quarries, one at Charenton and one at Val de Grasse. The deeper into the quarry the workers went, the higher the quality of stone was discovered. This allowed for the finer stone tracery and sculpture. It was also crucial that the quarry was near a river for transport. An expert in Gothic architecture named Arnaud Timbert showed how the blocks were sculpted and initialed by the sculptors for payment at the end of the day. A 13th century artist from Picardy in northern France put together a portfolio of 33 sheets of parchment containing 250 drawings intended for sculpture, ecclesiastical objects, architectural plans, and mechanical devices, such as a perpetual motion machine, a water-driven saw, lifting devices, and a machine for straightening the struts of a leaning house. The book survives and can be found in the Bibliothèque Nationale de Paris. So, yeah, it's...
Does all that research come from that one movie, or do you start going online and digging, and where does it come from?
Fortunately, since we our setup allows me to go back, and we have on-demand, so I can rewind... the show that we've recorded, and I could hear it again, and that helps absorb the information.
Yeah.
But also, the internet and libraries. I can deepen that research by going to the library, getting a book from the library, or going online and finding my way around it.
Very vivid. You know, when Michael McClure read your description of your time at Doe Bay, he's like, I have to visit that place.
Oh, that's amazing. That's amazing. Yeah. He's somebody I have enormous respect for.
Yeah.
That reminds me, Robbie Robertson is speaking tonight in the University District.
Yeah, and he's got a book. He's got a new book out about, I think, about the band, about his time with the band, isn't he?
Wow. But yeah. I just got wind of it last night. I was on the computer. But one of my favorite photographs of all time is that photograph taken in front of City Lights bookstore of Michael McClure, Allen Ginsberg, Robbie Robertson, and
Ferlin Getty's in that. Brodigan's in that, I think.
Oh, really? I haven't seen those. But I have seen the one with Michael McClure, Bob Dylan, Allen Ginsberg, and
Brodigan. Oh, wait a minute. No, I'm thinking of a different picture.
Well, this one is those four guys. Yeah. And it's, I just love that picture. I love the way they look and the way they're posed and the way they're dressed. It brings back that whole, it was circa 1965, so that huge hit of nostalgia comes out of that. But also, it serves to show how much more, poetry made a much larger impact on people's lives back then. It was far more important. It was linked with rock and roll. And Michael McClure really kind of embodied that. He was linked with his poetry, which is wonderful, amazing poetry. Talk about life and biology. I mean, he's really immersed in that. You really feel a primal energy coming out of Michael McClure's work. Yeah, exactly. It's very, very primal, but also very delicate and very beautiful, like a cathedral. Very nuanced at the same time. It's primal. But it goes to show that poetry had a very strong bond with the rock and roll of that era, obviously with Bob Dylan.
The Beatles, spelling it the same way the Beat generation was spelled.
Yeah, Bob Dylan is, I think, it's amazing. I continue to feel a little conflicted about that Nobel Prize. I can see where they would give it to him. I mean, he's not just a songwriter. Mm-hmm. I mean, he has written a couple of books as well. Mm-hmm. But he is not just a songwriter. I mean, you can read his songs. They're fascinating. It is a form of literature. And I don't think there aren't many songwriters you can say that about, really. I love Leonard Cohen's lyrics. They have a strong literary quality, but I forget where I was going with that.
Well, Leonard Cohen, his parting shot is, "You want it darker?"
Ooh, you wow. know? Yikes.
And I mean, that's a real sense of what's going on.
I was surprised when I found out that he coped with depression as well. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. I know he was into Buddhism, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that might have helped. I would imagine that would help.